You know, it's my great pleasure right now to introduce to everybody a man who really needs no introduction.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King.
Carl. I'm not calling the fans geeks. I'm not calling them rednecks, tobacco chewing nothing, because I've done all that myself.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King. Carl.
In your dreams, you will see me.
Excuse me, please, let's don't talk negatively.
I'm going to win the title. I'm going to keep my money and buy me some good old Tennessee drinking whiskey with it.
Thank you for being such a great husband.
And this is for you, Fannie Mae. Solid gold, baby, just like you and me.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to When It Was Cool Wrestling. I am Carl Stern, your host. Thank you very much for joining me. This in our rotation of classic wrestling audio shows. We're back around to the history of pro wrestling at Madison Square Garden series. I'm told by multiple people this is one of your favorite shows in our series of classic wrestling, and I think that has a lot to do with the fact that so much of the modern era, and by modern era I'm talking, you know, post-1984 all the way up through modern times, is so heavily talked about. So many different people cover it, including myself, that, you know, it's nice to hear something different for a change, and we will eventually get up there in this series, although right now we're back in the early 1900s, in particular 1916, and we're going through by way of using the great book Wrestling in the Garden, Volume 1. This is one of Scott Teal's great resource books, and then we're talking about a little bit from the Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling from When It Was Cool as well. And again, if you enjoy this show, if you'd like to hear the previous 10 editions of this show, along with, well, about 2,000 other podcasts dealing with pro wrestling history, pop culture, retro pop culture, much more, hope you will go to my website, whenitwascool.com, and become a Patreon supporter there and start listening to all the great stuff we have available. So we left on kind of a cliffhanger in the last episode. We've been talking about the big buildup between the mysterious Masked Marvel. Yes, that's a very cartoonish name, but you got to remember this is 1916. Not a lot of masked wrestlers have been around. Now, it's not correct to say no masked wrestlers have been around. There have been a few on and off, even over in Europe. There had been a wrestler called, get ready for this creative name, The Masked Wrestler. Yes, Theobald Bauer had wrestled as The Masked Wrestler over there. And but this is one of the ones that, the first ones that really got any publicity, The Masked Marvel. He's Mort Henderson, and we've already talked about the newspapers up in New York, particularly the Brooklyn Daily Eagle, was stalking this guy to try to find out who he was. They were publishing his real name, his job history, and everything else in the newspaper. Of course, the World Heavyweight Champion is Joe Stecker, and with all the publicity that the international tournament at the Manhattan Opera House had gotten, it was just a natural to match the two up and try to draw a big house with it, and they do so back on January 27th, 1916, and we talked about the lead up to it, and now we kick this show off with what happened. It is a catch-as-catch-can match. For the World Heavyweight Championship, Joe Stecker defeated the Masked Marvel, Mort Henderson, in two straight falls. The first fall went 9 minutes 50 seconds. The second one went 5 minutes 51 seconds. So a fairly short match for the time period of the day there. The undercard had Yusuf Hussein beat Wilhelm Berner. John Pirelli beat Sergeant Frank Leavitt. And so Sergeant Frank Leavitt is going to be somebody who's going to be very famous in wrestling for the time period coming up, a guy named Man Mountain Dean, and he was a big attraction in the 19-teens into the 1920s. This is the early days of his career. He loses here at Madison Square Garden. Harold Christensen beat Olaf Nelson, and young Hackenschmidt beat Bull Montana by DQ in 15 minutes time. Now, we've talked about these, quote, young gimmicks before. That's kind of the antiquated version of, like, a, you know, something junior, Rey Mysterio Jr., for instance. It's just like Rey Mysterio is Junior is not the son of the original Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio Sr. I think he's like a nephew or something like that. But there were oftentimes they would recycle these gimmicks. So like someone is the second coming, is what they're saying, of George Hackenschmidt. So this is young Hackenschmidt. They would push people this way. And I noticed there was no attendance given there. The results we get comes from the New York Times, Friday, January 28th, 1916. It says, Stecker throws the mass marvel. Joe Stecker, a big, strong farm boy from Dodge, Nebraska, stripped the masked marvel of all his mystery in a catch-as-catch-can wrestling bout at Madison Square Garden last night. The mass marvel signs his name, Mort Henderson, and he has been exciting much interest in wrestling circles hereabouts for some time. Stecker possessed enough wrestling tricks to throw half a dozen such at to throw half a dozen such marvels. There was a good-sized crowd, and that's all that was given there, in the garden, and it includes folks no one ever saw before at a wrestling match. It was an unusual sight to see clubmen in evening clothes and women in evening gowns and opera cloaks in the boxes around the garden ring. The thick haze of cigar smoke somewhat dimmed the luster of diamond necklaces and caused many a feminine cough. There was lots of enthusiasm, and the women did their share. Folks who live on Fifth Avenue and Upper West Side were there. Foreign-looking people, I kid you not, foreign-looking people from the artist colony in Washington Square and all the familiar faces you see along Broadway. Not since Frank Gotch showed here, and never won a match there, by the way, has there been such a wrestler as Stecker on the New York mat. He is much on the Gotch style and uses his legs as much as he does his arms. The long, powerful Stecker legs were entwined about the marvel all the time. Every one of his arm holds were enforced by a leg hold. He had the marvel worried from the start and worked so swiftly and incessantly the marvel didn't have time to take a long breath. Stecker always landed on top of his opponent. Only once was he on the mat himself, and he wriggled out of the marvel's clutches in half a minute. The scissors hold was something for which the marvel had no defense. When the Stecker legs were wrapped about him, he was as if in a vice. So Joe Stecker working his finishing hold there, and sounds like he pretty heavily dominates the mass marvel. So again, that was from January 27th, 1916. The next results we have from the gardens a couple months later, March the 6th, 1916. And we get Ed Strangler Lewis at the garden here. And he's going to be in a handicap match. It's a succession of matches. Haven't been a lot of these in modern times. I think Kabuki did one of these in World Class Wrestling at one of the shows there, where you have a succession of opponents, and Strangler Lewis is going to take on seven people in 60 minutes' time. And so that's your gimmick here. They called it a handicap match, but it's a little bit different than what we know nowadays. Ed Strangler Lewis beat Hans Furst. Strangler Lewis then beat Albert Muller. He then beat Carl Vogel, followed by Carl Nelson, Herman Schilling, and George Bailey. And George Bailey, a pretty well-known wrestler back then. So Ed Strangler Lewis wins all of his seven matches in pretty short succession. One lasted 2 minutes. One lasted only 3 seconds. The longest one looked like it was 5 minutes, 35 seconds. So it was basically Strangler Lewis running through a bunch of enhancement guys. You know, this is a well-known way wrestling's used for years of getting people over. Andre the Giant in handicap matches, Hulk Hogan in handicap matches early in his career, stuff like that. The show did have an undercard. Yusef Hussein beat Charles Olson. Dr. Benjamin F. Roller beat Tom Drack. 39 minutes. That was the longest match of the evening. Vladek Zabisco beat Hans Assam. And Yusef Hussein, I guess doing double duty here, beat George Sandel. It was said it was an added attraction. Scott Teal has some notes here. He says, in the results posted after the match, New York Times said that Lewis had defeated seven men, but only listed six. Yeah, that's right. There's only six. Let's see here. One, two, three, four, five, six. Yeah, it's only listed six. However, he wrestled the seventh unnamed challenger after beating George Bailey. He went into the match saying that he could beat four men in less than 60 minutes or forfeit $500 for each competitor not thrown. Management raised the number to seven because they thought it would attract more customers. Oh, yeah, well, you know, big difference there between six and seven, right? Very soon thereafter, May 2nd, 1916, Strangler Lewis is going to be back. And, you know, look, for a while to come, Strangler Lewis is going to be a fixture here when we're talking about our Madison Square Garden shows, as you would imagine. Frank Gotch is still alive at this point. He's still going to be alive for about another year, although he's largely retired here. He is threatening to train for a comeback and does, in fact, train for a comeback. But he's still alive. But once he passes away, the true top people in wrestling then are going to be Joe Stecker and Earl Caddick and Strangler Lewis, Ed Strangler Lewis, with Lewis eventually becoming the dominant of all of those. So May 2nd, 1916, Ed Strangler Lewis beat the Masked Marvel again. This time, Lewis beats him, this same as Stecker, in two straight falls. So Strangler Lewis beats the Masked Marvel. Hermann Goering went to a draw with Carl Sanderson in a 30-minute match. In a handicap match, Young Wally beat Nicola Montago they went 60 minutes, neither man able to secure a fall. In a handicap match, Han First beat Carl Olsen. Scott Till says the Masked Marvel removed his mask before the match and was revealed to be, surprise, surprise, Mort Henderson. Nicola Montago lost because he failed to score two pins in an hour, which was a condition of the handicap match. So, a little bit mixing these Madison Square Garden shows up with some gimmicks in here now. Scott Till said, here's a fascinating fact. Nicola Montagano, who also worked as Young Mundy, was married to Mabel Cody, who was the niece of Buffalo Bill Cody. So all kinds of carny intertwining here. On December 11th, 1916, in Springfield, Massachusetts, John Olin was awarded the decision over world champion Joe Stecker. After breaking out of Stecker's scissor hold twice, he picked Stecker up, carried him to the ropes, and dropped him over the side onto the press row. Stecker returned to the ring, but then left and returned to the dressing room. Newspaper reports claim that Stecker was frightened, almost stiff. Olin claimed the world title after this match, beginning a new lineage of the championship, although most of the general public did not accept this. An argument brought to an end the wrestling match between Joe Stecker and John Olin last night in the auditorium after 2 hours and 40 minutes of fruitless grappling. Neither man was able to get a fall. The incident, which caused the referee to award the bout to Olin, came after the wrestlers had moved off the mat. Each claimed the other did the pushing, and after a heated argument, Olin wanted to continue, but Stecker refused. And that was from the Springfield Union, December 12, 1916. So this is the era now we're going to see the world championship splinter into dozens of different lineages. Obviously, Frank Gotch is going to retire having never been beaten for the world championship. He's going to, I guess, sponsor or give his nod of approval to several different people who are going to be world champion. There's others, Joe Stecker, of course, out there with what most people consider to be the true world championship. Now, it's in dispute. Maybe John Olin has it. In addition to that, Vladek Zabisco is acclaimed as the world heavyweight champion at the conclusion of the Manhattan Opera House tournament in January 1917. So there's going to be a bunch of different world champions coming up. And it really wouldn't be until Lou Thesz comes along and starts kind of, well, Ed Strangler Lewis in a lot of ways reunifies a lot of these splinter groups, but we don't get a real, true, undisputed world champion again until Lou Thesz comes along in the 1940s. So We're going to spend several years where there's going to be different champions, and we'll see this get, it's going to get a little complicated at Madison Square Garden. Garden gets charter. Albany, New York, February 3rd. The Madison Square Garden Corporation of New York City has been granted a charter by the Secretary of State. Its objects are to manage exhibitions, shows, fairs, theaters, and restaurants, and to conduct boxing and wrestling matches. The corporation has a capital of $5,000. The following are the board of directors: Augustine Duncan, W.C. Roberts, and C.W. Davis of New York. And this was from the New York Clipper, Wednesday, February 7th, 1917. So when Madison Square Garden really fully, you know, expands and gets its, you know, its licensing together, its sort of statement of what all we're going to be promoting, boxing and wrestling were two of the top things that were talked about in there. And it was shortly thereafter, December 16th, 1917, that Frank Gotch passed away. So the undefeated world champion has now died. And wrestling would never see anybody really comparable to Frank Gotch. Many people have, you know, there's obviously been hugely successful popular people. Jim Lundos is coming up. Ed Stranger Lewis is around then. Lou Thesz, Buddy Rogers, Bruno Sammartino, you know, Hulk Hogan. The list goes on and on of very popular, very famous wrestlers. But Frank Gotch straddled that era between work and shoot and being so dominant and being really an American sports cultural figure. We go now to the New York Telegram. Dateline, Sunday, December 23rd, 1917. Zbyszko defeats Strangler Lewis in wrestling bout. Championship is still densely populated by P.T. Knox. Vladek Zbyszko won the rules-making championship of the world at the Lexington Theater last night. Incidentally, he was awarded a gold belt to wrap his rules in. After he had barred everything but the handshake, the mighty son of Poland proceeded to pin Ed Strangler Lewis' shoulders to the mat in 1 hour, 47 minutes, 37 seconds. But a half dozen wrestlers are still trying to stretch the wrestling crown around their heads. Before he would agree to meet Lewis on the mat, Zbyszko insisted that the Strangler would have to leave his now-famous headlock in the dressing room. Further, he insisted that anything that remotely resembled the headlock would have to be eliminated from his party, or he wouldn't play. So, the Strangler agreed, and it was reported he was coaxed to agree with $1,000 in cash. And then Zbyszko just toe-holed into submission. It was generally supposed legalized boxing had been legislated out of New York, but it hasn't, not as long as wrestling tournaments are permitted. Even the dear old kidney punch has been revived, and it seems that hitting someone with one arm free is according to Hoyle. So that's kind of tongue-in-cheek newspaper writing for 1917, basically stating that the wrestlers were punching each other about as much as they were wrestling. January 13, 1918, at New York's Astor Grill overlooking Broadway, Tex Rickard, James S. Johnston, Bill Fallon, and Jack Curley are reportedly busy feeding Strangler Lewis into a mood for signing articles to wrestle Vladek Zbyszko. This will lead to a bout March 19th at Madison Square Garden. But first, we go to January 29, 1918. Jack Curley is promoting a show at Madison Square Garden. He has a world title match. Now, two of these folks we've already heard about, both these in the main event, both heard they have some claim to the World Heavyweight Championship. But here, Vladek Zbyszko defeats John Olin by pinfall in just over an hour. On the undercard, Joe Stecker beats Yusuf Hussein, and Sulo Heavenpah beat Carl Vogel. Promoter Jack Curley is said to have instituted the one-fall plan at the Zbyszko, John Olin, and Stecker Hussein program 2 weeks ago, when the fans liked it so well, it was made a permanent policy. This Curley scheme has much to commend it. With a two-hour time limit and a decision on points in the event of no fall, it is assured that practically every mat contest will provide a winner and loser. a staller of the Strangler Lewis type would be forced to uncover and do some actual wrestling or find himself on the losing end of the decision. So it was written in the Des Moines, Iowa Daily News, February 18, 1918. Joe Stecker, the Nebraska Scissors Hold wrestling expert, and Vladek Zabisco, the Polish Hercules, who will oppose each other on the mat at Madison Square Garden tonight, completed training for the match yesterday. Both are reported in excellent physical condition, and each is confident of victory. The match will be governed by catch-as-catch-can rules, and the victor will be determined by one fall. So this is a time period where they're transitioning out of the old three-fall system into the one fall to a finish match. We will go back to the three-fall matches coming up in the future. They will get nostalgic for those three-fall, being able to stretch those matches out. But for the time being, at least, we're into one-fall matches. The one-fall decision was adopted by promoters with the consent of the managers of both wrestlers as a means toward eliminating the tediousness which usually accompanies a protracted bout where two falls in three are required. Therefore, this bout, which is the chief event, will begin not later than 10:15 if the present schedule of promoters is carried out. Other formidable contenders for the title are Earl Caddick, a private at Camp Dodge, Iowa, and Earl Strangler Lewis of Lexington, Kentucky. It is likely that a match will be arranged for the victor of this evening's bout with either Lewis or Caddick, said the New York Times, March 1st, 1918. So we go to March 1st, 1918 now, and we've got a big sellout, 12,000 people at this version of the Garden, so 12,000 people. Joe Stecker went to a draw with Vladek Zabisco. Can you believe it? 2 hours. The match was stopped at just after midnight, 12:10 a.m., so their one-fall plan, well, it didn't work. The undercard had Hilmer Johnson beat John Trofsky, John Fredberg beat Harry Stevens, and Yusuf Hussein beat Charlie Cutler by decision after 30 minutes. George Bothner was a referee for the main event, ruled it a draw, but the newspaper reporters covering the match thought Stecker should have been awarded the decision. The cruel, bone-breaking toehold of the Polish Adonis, Vladek Zabisco, had no terrors for Joe Stecker of Dodge, Nebraska, in the wrestling match at Madison Square Garden last night before a throng which filled every part of the spacious arena. The two wrestlers mauled and jostled each other for 2 hours without a fall. When the bout ended at 12:10, referee George Bothner declared the contest a draw. Stecker was too clever to leave himself open to the deadly clutch by which Zabisco has beaten so many of his opponents. The Nebraskan used his leg so skillfully that when the pole clutched his toe, Stecker simply kicked his foot out of the vice-like grip. Stecker's brute strength and his weight saved him from Stecker's famous scissors hold. Much of the time of the bout was tedious as the two grapplers with heads together pushed each other all around the ring. Not once was either grappler in danger of being thrown. The few times that Stecker got into a position to apply the scissors, Zabisco's strength carried him out of danger. Repeatedly, Zabisco grasped Stecker's toes and applied all his strength, but the Nebraskan used his legs as cleverly as he used his arms and kicked the much-feared toe hold into oblivion. Stecker is by far the most skillful grappler the Pole has ever met, and his elusiveness and speed kept him safe from Zabisco's bruising strength. It was 10-10 when the big bout got underway. Stecker and Zabisco, rushing from their corners, butted their heads together for several minutes like a couple of goats. It was easy to see that the Pole had a great deal more arm power than the Nebraska farm boy. The muscles stuck out on Zabisco's arms and back in knots, while Stecker was the slim, rangy, athletic type. The men had been wrestling 40 minutes when Zabisco clutched Stecker's toe and the Garden went wild with applause when the Nebraskans squirmed out of danger. Zabisco worked incessantly to get an effective toehold, but Stecker was too slippery for him. At the end of the first hour, after the men had been on their feet for some time, Stecker took the offensive and forced Zabisco down to a sitting posture, where he tried to apply his famous scissors hold. The Pole broke it by getting Stecker's toe, but Joe quickly tore himself away. These wrestling tussles unquestionably have a strong appeal for all sorts of persons. For the newsboys who fringe the rails of the top galleries up in the rafters to the foreign grand opera singers in the boxes, everyone in the big crowd became worked up over the antics of the wrestlers. Several hundred fashionably dressed women were among the spectators and joined in the loud outburst of enthusiastic approval. Some of the women wore evening gowns and seemed just as unconcerned as they would be in a theater box. All the sporting celebrities among Broadway were there, as well as prominent men from Fifth Avenue clubs. The opening bout brought together Hilmar Johnson of Sweden and John Trotsky, a Pole. The Swede was too clever for Trotsky, and he doubled him up on the floor with a reverse body hold in 5 minutes 10 seconds. Trotsky held his opponent off for several minutes by sheer strength, but could not match the Swede's wrestling ability. In the second preliminary, John Freeberg of Sweden threw Harry Stevenson of England with a flying mare and a double body hold in 22 minutes, 45 seconds. Charlie Cutler and Yusuf Hussain indulged in a rough-and-tumble affair. Hussain entertained the crowd by hurling Cutler's 300 pounds through the ropes several times. Cutler was badly punished with a toe hold, but he broke away and made Hussain wince with a deadly head hold. They mauled each other all over, inside and outside the ring, for 30 minutes without a fall. Dr. Roller gave the decision to Hussain. So said the New York Times, Saturday, March 2nd, 1918. So a lot of heavy coverage being given in the New York Times to professional wrestling back then at Madison Square Garden, as well it should. I mean, the big sellout shows. And to wrap this show up, we'll cover one more, another sellout. March 19th, 1918, 12,000 people are going to come see a rematch, one fall. And this time we have Ed Strangler Lewis, or excuse me, this time not a rematch, we have Ed Strangler Lewis beating Vladek Zabisco by DQ in just over 30 minutes. Yusuf Hussain beat Mort Henderson, the former Masked Marvel. Joe Malkiewicz beat George Mannich by decision in 30 minutes. The very famous wrestler, Americus, who Frank Gotch once put forward as a possible world champion, Gus Scholin, beat Jess Westengaard. The main event was promoted as a grudge match. When Strangler Lewis fell out of the ring and couldn't continue after Zabisco headbutted him at 38 minutes 28 seconds, referee Billy Roche ruled it an illegal move and disqualified Zabisco, and Lewis was declared the new world heavyweight champion. A riot broke out after the decision, and the trio had to fight their way back to the dressing rooms. It was described by the New York Times as the wildest wrestling bout New York has ever seen. The angry crowd goes after Zabisco, one spectator producing a bad cut when he whacks Zabisco with his cane. This card might be pointed to as the launching point toward what professional wrestling will become. Four solid bouts capped off by a chaos with a controversial main event finish. A one-fall rule had been put in place, reportedly agreed upon by all promoters in the U.S. and Canada. Under the new system, there is a time limit of 2 hours placed on all championship matches. There must be a winner and loser in every match. Therefore, they get, you know, judges, referees are able to make the decision, or sometimes they have judges and whatever. But it's a real turning point in wrestling, this March 19th, 1918 bout between Strangler Lewis and Vladek Zabisco, the end zone of DQ. Back then, this is before the disqualification rule. Disqualification also meant you lost the world championship. So the crowd clearly, I mean, and this is going to be something we'll see several times throughout the history of wrestling at Madison Square Garden. They are going to riot when they don't like the official decision. But it was a big-time match there, and we're getting into an era where wrestling is going to become really established as a big, big deal in New York. Strangler Lewis is going to become the most famous wrestler in the world at this point in time after Frank Gotch had died. And we're going to see a huge succession of world championships. We're going to see double crosses. We're going to see one of the earliest filmed world championship matches ever. Now, we know Gotch and Hackenschmidt was filmed. We just don't have the film anymore. But we do have the film of what will be coming up in 1921 between Joe Stecker and an Earl Caddick for the world championship there at Madison Square Garden. So a lot of great historical stuff coming up, a lot of great history here. To be sure, we're starting to get into the thick of the Strangler Lewis era, but we're going to be talking a lot about Joe Stecher and Earl Caddick as well, plus Stanislius and Vladek Zabisco both are going to be regulars in this coming era, and some big-name stuff that really sets New York as the spot, the number one place for professional wrestling on the planet for many, many years to come. It makes Madison Square Garden the arena that is the one that's most known for great, famous, high-profile professional wrestling. Of course, the amount of the news media that's there in New York covering this certainly leads to that as well. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for joining me here. Hope you'll check out my website, whenitwascool.com. Hope you will ultimately become a Patreon supporter. You can listen to the prior 10 episodes of this series. We go all the way back to Gilmore's Garden and wrestling that was happening there. Plus, that's not all. We have lots and lots and lots of pro wrestling history, retro pop culture, history, music, much, much more, movies, TV, all that good stuff at whenitwascool.com. Hope you will check it out and become a supporter. And I'll see you here again soon with another show.
WhenItWasCool.com is your source for the best in retro pop culture. When It Was Cool features articles and podcasts on retro TV and movies, toys, action figures, pro wrestling, food, video games, and more. Hit the Patreon button to support us and get instant access to hundreds of premium podcasts and features. Family friendly and fun. WhenItWasCool.com.